Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Grandmaster Karen Eden Herdman, and you are listening to Parts Unknown with Professor Gary Lee, now in six countries with over 14,000 listeners. And here he is, my friend, Professor Gary Lee.
This program is sponsored by the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation and Elite Publications. Everyone has a story. You just have to get it out. Visit Elite Publications at www.elitepublications.org.
Mahalo and aloha, everybody. This is Professor Gary Lee with Parts Unknown, and so excited to be able to be in your homes on a Tuesday night to share with you history of sport karate in America, and to say thank you for 10 years for allowing us to do that. And, you know, before we introduce my special guest tonight, I want to introduce the man that has put us on the air for all these years. And he's an amazing producer. He is the founder of the Elite Publications. But I'll let him introduce himself. I want to bring on Haji Jesse Bowen. Jesse, are you there, sir?
Hey, sir. How are you doing?
Well, Happy New Year, sir. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you for supporting the Sport Karate Museum, the radio show, Parts Unknown, and all the people that we have on. You know, we've done over, 700 interviews? But, you know, here's the deal. I want people to know what you're involved with, because you do some really special in a couple months is it next year? When is it? It's coming up, right?
Yes, sir. We have our current project that we're doing. We are recognizing, you know, women in the martial arts, and that's going to be at Sifu Goldberg's event coming up end of the month. We're recognizing them. We have a biography book that we're publishing on them. We also have another book that's coming out. It's called Elite Martial Artists in America, which is a compilation book we're really excited about, you know, about that. And then, like, so, you know, we have several other events that we're doing. We're publishing for other martial artists. We have a new author that's going to, Dexter Kennedy. He's one of the guys that I met down, actually in Texas. His book
is
coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, I support him every year with his. I support him every year with his denim belt and what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, we've got a book coming out, and it's already made Amazon bestseller. So, you know, we're just trying to, you know, make the world a better place by helping people to be able to tell their stories. You know, we're talking legacy of being able to share that. So, you know, that's where we are now. We're just, you know, we've always have been, and, you know, continuing to, you know, really work on making the world a better place.
Well, we thank you for supporting what we do. And, you know, if people wanted to get a ring or a hat or, you know, something, or the book that you helped create a few years ago, how would they get involved with that and do that, sir?
Well, all they need to do is go to who'swhointhemartialarts.com and go to our store. We have a section there for books and rings for the Sport Karate Museum. So go to who'swhointhemartialarts.com and in the menu, click on store.
Cool. Well, listen, don't go anywhere, because I'm going to bring you back, and I'm going to get you to help me answer the question tonight with the five. So we're going to bring you back, sir, as a special guest. So stay close with Haji Jesse Bowen. Okay, sir.
All right, will do.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that is my producer, Haji Jesse Bowen, an amazing man. Now I'd like to introduce the two guys that keep me in line every week. And this one guy I'm really proud of. And I'm not exaggerating, guys. I mean, I research everything. But it's true. He's a 40-time. That's right, I said it. 40-time NBL NASCAR point karate champion. He is a product of Mr. Joe Lewis. And Mr. Lewis, before he passed, he allowed me to adopt him. And he's been my student for almost 10 years now. My co-host, Mr. Dean Piles. Dean, are you there, buddy?
Yes, sir. See you in the Gata, everyone. Host of the Wanty.
How are you? I saw you with a full beard in a picture today. You have a full beard now.
Yeah, I got my beard grew out. It's hunting season, so I'm going to keep the full beard out, man. It's really bushy, too. I mean, I look like a mountain man now. My fiance, she's like, you're shaving that before we get married. I'm like, yeah, I'll shave it. Yeah, I'll cut it down.
Well,
not all the way off, though, because the Wolverine has to have a stripe. So, you know,
That's right. You got to have that hair. Listen, let me introduce the other co-host. This gentleman, you know, guys, I don't throw the word master or grandmaster around. I don't use it often at all. But this man, I enjoy saying the word master in front of his name because he is a master of Tang Soo Do. And, you know, the one credit I'm really proud to brag about him is he is the only martial artist inducted into the Gollybum Cleveland Sports Hall of Fame. He is also the spokesman of my military group underneath the museum. And I'm talking about Master A.J. Perry. A.J., are you there, buddy?
How are you, Gary? Thanks for the nice introduction. Appreciate it.
How are you, A.J.? How you doing? I'm doing good. I'm excited.
You got a great guest on tonight, too.
Yes, I do. So now I got got you guys out of the way, Dean Piles and A.J. Perry, Master A.J. Perry. I want to introduce my special guest. You know, I get excited about everybody, but there's certain people I can really get excited about because you got history with them. Back in the 80s, a lot of us were chasing points in the Karate Illustrated magazine system. And one of the top lady performers, one of our superstars, one of our original superstars, was a lady named Arlene Lemus. Now, I say this because she would give some of the top women fighters in our sport a tough time. And I saw her win many first places, and I also saw her win in weapons. She did a double nunchuck kata also. Now, I know her original, we're going to talk about this. I know she started in Kung Fu, but she went on to train in Taekwondo, and she also won a gold medal in the World Olympics. I'm not talking about the Olympics that George Minshew created down in Texas. I'm talking about the World Olympics and in Taekwondo. And we'll talk about this. I'm talking about my dear friend from Chicago, Miss Arlene Lemus. Arlene, are you there?
I am. How are you, Professor?
Well, I'm doing great. I've been excited for the past week to be able to get you one-on-one. So are you living in Chicago still?
Yeah, I am back in Chicago. I lived just outside of D.C. for about 30 years, but I've been back in Chicago for the last 2.5 years now, so I'm happy to be back home.
Well, let's go back a little bit. Let's go back. You started in Kung Fu, correct?
Yeah, originally my first style was Shaolin Kung Fu.
Shaolin Kung Fu. Now, when did you transition to Taekwondo?
Well, even when I was practicing Kung Fu on a daily basis, the only tournaments that were in the Chicago area were really heavily Taekwondo tournaments. So our school would kind of change our uniforms just so that we could go compete in these tournaments. So even though I was training in Kung Fu, in order to get, to have the fun of competing in a local tournament, we would compete in Taekwondo tournaments.
Well, I'm going to have a little fun with you. I'm going to have a little fun with you and bring back a memory. Tom Latua, Lava Nationals, 1982. I took a third place to you in Weapons College. Do you remember that?
I just remember having a great time at the Lama Nationals. But
you had a double Noche Cana, and I took a third place to you. I'll never forget that because, you know, back in the day, there wasn't a lot of women that were really standing out, and there were hardly any women in weapons. And you really did good. And then that day, you beat Miss Denley for $500 that night. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember. It was, you know, it's like any sport. When you can win in your hometown, it's a big deal. So
yes,
being able to win to a formidable opponent like that in my hometown was a big deal for me.
Well, you were very special because you did stand out. And, you know, Arlene, let me ask you a question. When did you decide to get involved with the World Olympics?
Well, the International Olympic Committee, or the IOC, I think that's what you're referring to as the World Olympics.
Yes.
So for me, I was finishing up high school. I was at university. I was, you know, kind of figuring out, what do I want to do? You know, do I, you know, I was at the university level. I was playing softball and, you know, is it, what else can I accomplish in open style martial arts? And it was kind of a crossroad for me. And it just right around that time, someone had reached out to me locally who I'd known for a long time and said, hey, Taekwondo is really going to be in the Olympics and it fits your fighting style. Why don't you try it out? So I went to a local tournament at one of the junior colleges here in Chicago, and I just fell in love with it. You know, you're fighting for rounds, not points. You know, I thought I was in pretty good shape, and I left each match huffing and puffing. I thought I kicked with a lot of power, yet I was kicking people hard, and
well,
they were still standing.
Arlene, let me stop you. Let me make something clear. You had a hook kick from hell. You had a great hook kick. And you had a ridge hand. You had a ridge hand. And most people in Taekwondo didn't throw ridge hands. But you had a ridge hand that was incredible, too.
Right.
And, you know, I was really proud to watch you fight in the way you did fight. Now, when you won the Olympic Taekwondo gold medal, what was it like representing the United States around the world? And winning the gold medal, how cool is that? What did it make you feel like?
It was pretty incredible. And really, I don't have words to describe how it felt. But the closest I can get is to just tell you it was an honor of a lifetime. It was an incredible experience for me. And, of course, to represent this country, you can't ask for more. Fighting Korea, in Korea, in the sport that they created for the gold medal, I mean, you can't write it up any better.
How many fights did you have to go through to get the gold?
Four three-minute rounds, you know, four fights. Each fight, three-minute rounds. I had a knockout in the first fight, so that saved me a couple rounds.
Explain that a little bit to my listeners. You said knockout. Knockout was allowed in Taekwondo in the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. It's full contact or by decision at the end of the three rounds. So if you could knock someone out before the end of the three rounds, you didn't have to fight the other round. So my first fight ended in a knockout in the first round.
Now, do they still allow knockout today in the Olympics?
Yeah, they still do.
They? Okay. Cool. Now, one of the questions that was sent in by my emails, by my listeners, was who was your toughest opponent in the days of point karate in the early 80s?
Oh, it's an easy answer. That's Linda Denley. Linda Denley and I battled, and I tell people all the time, I don't win the Olympics without my battles against Linda. I mean, it really created the fighter and gave me the fortitude to do what I did in 88.
Well, you know, Linda is one of my best friends. She used to travel 40 miles one way just to come to my fight club, and we would beat up a lot of the people that would come in and stuff. And the neat thing about Linda, what I really love about her, and we've talked about her fights, and we've talked about you. I've talked to her about you before, is that Linda is a technician, and she respected the fact that there was somebody like you that gave her a strong challenge every time she competed in these in the major tournaments. And, you know, Arlene, let me share this with you. Being a champion is hard, but it has to be done by certain people. And we're so proud of the fact that you were our champion, not only representing America, but representing point karate in the heyday. And don't go nowhere, okay? Because I'm going to bring you back. We're going to play the Legends name game. And this is where I hit you with a name, and you get to talk about them, you know, and that's how I'm going to end this show. So please don't go nowhere, okay, Arlene?
Okay.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to gold medalist of the World Olympics, Miss Arlene Lemus, and we'll be back in just a moment. But, you know, the neat thing about Parts Unknown and the show that Jesse Bowen produces, we get to put together a group of people called 4+1 or the 5 to talk about certain subjects. And tonight we have a very good question, and I've got some people on the panel, and I'm going to introduce them. And we all introduce the lady first. And this lady has been my friend for many years, and she is a PKL champion, an A3 Bravo underneath the Sport Karate Museum. She trained in Shorinru Karate and Fu now presently. I'm talking about my dear friend from North Carolina, Miss Karen Schweitzer. Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am. Happy New Year.
What a great show. What a great show dealing with Arlene. Now, I will ask you, Karen, this question, so give me your best answer. How do you feel about martial arts being in the World Olympics? How has it affected in your attitude? How do you feel about it?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I loved it when I was a student. I would have been in that program the first chance it came up. So I started out as a judo person, so I used to love to watch it. Judo, you might even get to see it on TV when they had the Olympics. And it's not really respected by the media or the people who do the scheduling. We really had to look hard to find Arlene when she was fighting. We were in your corner, Arlene. And we wanted to be, you know, we wanted to see it, and we had to look and find it. It was on a different channel, and it was, you know, sporadic times. It was very hard, but it was worth it for what it does for people who have schools. They get a kickback from that as far as new students.
Hey, Karen,
in the 80s when... Yeah.
Hey, Karen, you ought to take it off speaker. It's really hard to hear you.
Oh, really? Sorry. How about now?
What's better?
Yeah, I hear you good. Yeah.
Okay.
That's better. Yeah.
Okay. Well, back in the 80s, there was a man named Sensei Anderson, and I think it was George Anderson, was trying to put
together. Yeah, he's from Akron, Ohio.
Akron, Ohio, George Anderson, yeah.
Yeah, he was trying to get Japanese karate in for the Japanese Olympics.
Yes.
And
well,
he
was
had a Chucky great
Hill
idea.
And Patrick Hickey and George Anderson, those, and Thomas LaPuppet.
Yeah, hey, shut up. Let her finish. Let her finish.
The idea
was to feature the traditional Japanese forms. So they had decided on 10 forms that everyone competing all over the world would choose from those 10 forms. And then they had to be strictly done by Japanese standards, and that was what they were going to do. And I was all for that because I had a whole studio of kids that were like teenagers that would have been primed for that.
Karen, will you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Okay, next time you see AJ, will you jab slap him, please?
No, he hid from me last time I was there. I tried to see him. He hid from me. So.
So next time you see him, jab slap him for telling me to shut up on my own show.
Gary, somebody has to.
Okay. So let's move right
anyway,
along.
I think there's a lot of perks for the whole art if it's done well in the Olympics. Okay? I think
it
really helps everybody.
I agree.
Okay.
And as I was saying, it was George Anderson, Thomas the Puppet, Toki Hill, and a whole group of traditional guys who were working on doing what you were talking about, Karen. Now, let me move right along. Hunky Bowen, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, as being our special guest on the 4 Plus 1 tonight, how do you feel about the Olympics being involved, or the martial arts being involved in Olympics? I know you were working with a couple of things, but go ahead and share with people your involvement.
Well, you know, when I first started, when I got involved in the martial arts, you know, there was this talk about martial arts becoming an Olympic sport. And, you know, as a competitor, I was all for that. And you know, it was like, you know, karate was going to be it. And there were so many things going on. But as a competitor, doing point karate and competing, and then as a promoter, event promoter, you know, all that was very exciting, and I've always been a supporter of the sport karate. And in 1984, they started the North Carolina State Games, and that's sort of where I started organizing the state as far as being, you know, the coordinator for the state games. Then I went on in 1986. I agreed to stay on and be the coordinator for the Olympic Committee and for the Taekwondo event. And, you know, that was a really political type thing as a karate guy, but yet still they asked me to, you know, be the guy that's in charge of the Taekwondo. So it was give and go, but fortunately, you know, Dr. Leroy Walker was really in my corner for me to be able to do that. So it was a great experience. I traveled to Texas to compete, not to compete, but to work with the coordinators the year before. And so in 87, the festival came about, and it was just so great to see someone, organization coming together, being able to agree on rules and be able to move forward and produce great athletes. And then, you know, my final year at Duke, of course, I started at Duke in 1988. I became the instructor for their martial arts program, and I was there for 28 years with Duke. And my final year, I had an opportunity to be the coach for the Taekwondo team and to lead their collegiate team, you know, from, you know, I was up in Virginia competing. I think this was at Arlene School that I took a group of people there, and everybody did very well. And then I went on, took them to San Francisco, where the university won their first gold medal. So all of these things are really, really exciting. Any athlete would want to be able to be on that stage, and hopefully at one point, at some time, you know, that karate will be able to, you know, be able to be at that point. But as an athlete, you just, you know, you keep training, and then if you want it bad enough, then you have to transition over, you know, to actually have that opportunity. But I know my experience of having a chance to work with that group of people, you know, that on that level, international level, and to be able to support it and just look back and all of those things, really, it's very exciting.
Cool. Well, let's bounce out of North Carolina and enjoy talking to Karen and Hunty Bowen. Let's go to Oregon. Let's go to my dear friend, Professor Tom Spellman. Tom, are you there, buddy?
Oh, I'm right here, Gary.
Okay, this is my web designer of the Sport Karate Museum, a 10th-degree black belt, and he is a professor, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to ask him, how do you feel, Professor, on the martial arts being involved with the World Olympics?
Well, you know, back in the late 60s and early 70s, when we used to go to Mr. Oshima's Nisei Week tournament in L.A. and Nisei or Japanese Town or, we always had to – the way we got in was we didn't pay for any fees except for the fact that we had to renew our AAU membership. And, the AAU, the Amateur Athletic Union in the United States, was established in 1888, so it's been around for a long time. And then the Amateur Sports Act of 1978 started talking about the governance, and it allowed for other organizations other than the AAU that up till that time pretty much had the end-all and say-all to be able to set up governing bodies within the country that could be work with part of the Olympic committees in those early years. Some of the problems was that some of the old school guys like Grandmaster Nishiyama, they wanted to be at the head of all of that, and so there was problems with that. And the point was that Nishiyama's refusal to align with his organization with WUKO back in the 90s torpedoed the International Olympic Committee's acceptance of WUKO as the Amateur Karate International Governing Body that might have opened up the possibility in that time period to be able to actually go into karate as with the traditional karate go in. Nowadays,
we all know that the Koreans never really liked the Japanese, and the Japanese didn't really like the Koreans. And that is a really kind of a simple way to say it. And, it's really interesting that, that we've allowed to be able to accept the fact that Japanese karate do wasn't in the Olympics. Well, this year when it was kind of embarrassing how the Iranian won the gold medal. Because
you don't get knocked out
with your eyes open.
But, Gary, we've got to take two things into consideration. One of the things is that this particular Olympics in Japan, the opportunity to not only do the karate, the kumite, they also had kata. And now the tournament players.
The kata was immaculate.
But there's more to it than that, okay? One of the biggest things that happened in that was the fact that it had always been something that had been very, very competitively kind of eclipsed by the Japanese competitors. They had an edge, in a lot of different ways in the men's division. This year, or this past year at the Olympics, the whole men's kata competition was actually
in the background.
Not to interrupt you, but somebody's got a radio or TV playing in the background and you can't hear. They need to shut that off or mute your phone.
Please mute your phone so we hear Professor Spellman. Thank you.
Okay, one of the significant things that happened was a kind of a two-pronged sword. The guy that the gentleman that won the competition, Ryu Kiyuna, was a Japanese person, but the truth of the matter is he was specifically a born and bred Okinawan. The Okinawan practitioners were pretty much, kind of pushed out of most of the Japanese competition for the most part, and they just generally didn't get involved with the Japanese because they knew that it was not going to work well and there was going to be politicism. So in this particular case, he came in. Now, not only did he come in, but he was from a system that up until his instructor's time had been totally one family bloodline only for a long time, coming from China. And the system is called Ryue Ryu, and it's a very exclusive system of which Kiyuna's instructor was himself a world champion before he taught Kiyuna, and then Kiyuna came in, and he took the whole thing. An Okinawan, for the first time, came in and was in amongst the Japanese and all the other world competitors, and he actually won the tournament. And he won it with a system and a kata that nobody knew about until Sugio Sakamoto, his instructor, went on the world stage before him and introduced it to the world. And he beat everybody with it. So that was a really wonderful thing. And because of that, the idea of being able to see that on the world stage and be able to see something that otherwise we just wouldn't see in most cases. We wouldn't see an open tournament.
Right.
And we wouldn't see it necessarily in other places. You know, it was a really fantastic opportunity to open up to a whole new world of karate and recognize that an Okinawan actually could win, and with an art that nobody else even knew about, but yet he was so dynamic and so wonderful.
Let me tell you what's fantastic, Tom. What's fantastic is I've got someone like you to create and talk about the real history. And I want to thank you so much and what you've done and what you're doing for the museum and the web page. And, you know, we got an incredible year planned this year. And, you know, you're very special, Tom, because I can always count on history being told when you get you on the air. So let me
The last thing I wanted to say to you, Gary, is that the world champion, Kiuna, and his kata, if you watch him doing his kata and you watch Garrett, they're very, very similar. Garrett's got the same energy. He's got the same style of movement.
Garrett
and the timing and everything else. Huh?
Garrett
Your
who?
Son. Your son.
Oh,
Garrett.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So, I mean, you know, that's the thing, man. You know, he's there's something happening, you know, with that particular performance. And
well,
then
I got one
like
thing
Garrett
to say. Listen, Tom, I got one thing to say. The apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Yeah, even if it's a crab apple sometimes.
There you go, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Professor Tom Selman, with such a sweet compliment. Happy New Year, Tom. I wish you the best, and I'll
Thank
see you
Thank you,
in
sir. Same to you.
Moving right along, someone that's very, very, very special, ladies and gentlemen. You know, he is the co-founder of the Black Karate Federation, and this year, in October, we get to celebrate this man's career. He's a product of the great Joe Louis. He's one of the best fighters we ever had in the lightweight division. He worked at Bravo Magazine when people like Joe Louis and Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris walked the hall. I'm talking about Mr. Jerry Smith. Jerry, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir. I sure am.
What a great show tonight. Now, you know, I wanted to ask you, sir, because you've been around a long, long time. Did you ever think about our karate do being in the Olympics? And how do you feel about it?
Oh, let me say, that was a time when I thought, because I got a call from, I think it must be the AAU, and they knew that I was a coach and a trainer. But I don't know this, but when they found out that I wasn't Taekwondo, they never called me back again. I thought I was going to. But the thing about it was, in San Jose, the AAU had the finals for who would be chosen for the Olympics. And at the time I was teaching at Fremont High School, and I took my boss, who was the principal, female lady, to the tryouts. They weren't tryouts, they were the finals. And we went there, and I'm telling you, that was judo, going to AAU judo was in another ring and the fighting. So, you know, point karate to me is one of the most exciting things that you can ever do. I mean, it's just so interesting. And so I was all excited about, but it wasn't very interesting. I don't know whether it was because of the Taekwondo rules. I know they give more points for kicking. No one was using their hands. And I was very, very kind of put down. Now, I know how great Taekwondo open fighters are in open competition. I fought Bong Yu and Chris Oakey and a lot of other great, great fighters. So I, even when I watched the Olympics, and maybe, look, I'm just telling you the way that I feel. And I was just so, it wasn't very exciting. Everybody just kicked. And and it seems to me that the rules, because I think you got more points for kicking than you did for punching, so everybody just kicked. And so I hope that they open up and have an open competition where, you know, people can come from all different styles all over the world. And it'll be, I think it would be much, much more exciting. That's just my point of view there.
Well, I appreciate your point of view, Uncle Jerry. And I mean, you know, the neat thing about it is that on the five, on the 4+1, we got this adversity of people from Oregon, Vegas, North Carolina, you know, everywhere. So I appreciate it. And the opinion of fighters is important. And you're a great coach. You're a great fighter. You're a great leader. And we're very proud that we get to honor you this year in October.
Gary, let me say this. Just from this show, I've learned so much more than what I knew about the Olympics and martial arts just from listening to the people that you've had on before. So it's been a very, very, very wonderful learning experience.
Well, you're part of it, sir. Having you on the show every week is part of the learning experience for our listeners and for the people who are even on the show. I mean, you know, you're one of my original heroes, and to be able to talk to you weekly, you know how exciting that is to me. It really is exciting. So I want to move right along, though, and I want to thank you and wish you a happy new year, sir. And I hope to see you in October. Now, the plus one, you know, we're called the five or the 4+1, but the plus one, I wanted it to be someone important. So I researched and I found a great writer, a writer that will write for the Sport Karate Museum webpage. And he's also an advisor for the Sport Karate Museum. He's an A3 black belt. He's a well-knowledgeable man in Korean martial arts. I'm talking about my veteran friend, James Moore. James, you there?
Yes, I am. Uncle Gary, I'm here.
What a great show this is. So I want to ask you, as being a Korean stylist, how important it was or how do you feel about martial arts being involved with the Olympics?
Well, first of all, it is a great show tonight, and thank you. And obviously, clearly, I'm very much in favor of it. You know, I did a little bit of research online just to get us some statistics about martial arts in the world and in the Olympics. And I think we all know that wrestling, taekwondo, and judo are currently in the Olympics. And one statistic I found is that those three together represent the ninth most popular sport in the Olympics. And I thought that alone said a lot.
Hey, Jim,
that doesn't even include fencing. Yes.
They almost took wrestling out of the Olympics. That's like the original Olympic sport, and it was almost taken out of the Olympics recently.
You're absolutely right, and that would have been sad. That really would have been sad. You know, martial arts obviously is one of the, you know, major athletic activities of the world. And as Jerry said, lots of action, fun to watch. That's, you know, reasons it really should be in there. I think to me a lot more fun to watch than a lot less people involved in some of the other parts of Olympics. I don't mean to put anything down, but, you know, the one that people tend to belittle a little bit is curling, you know.
Or rhythmic gymnastics, too.
Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, you've got all fun sports. You've got breakdancing in there. You've got badminton, archery, that type of thing. But I found some other statistics that I thought really emphasize why martial arts should be in the Olympics. And this was last updated less than a month ago, actually. And it was 18.1 million Americans practiced some form of martial arts at least once in the last year. 52% were men, 48% were women. 35% were in MMA classes, 22.2% in karate, 12.8% in taekwondo, and judo at 10.2%. That says a lot. It just says that a lot of people love martial arts. They're doing it themselves, even though they're not at the level of being an Olympic athlete, but they're doing it themselves.
Right.
And you know, maybe MMA is the next thing to get into the Olympics, the next activity, the next sport. So anyway, I just think it's great to have martial arts in the Olympics, and I hope it continues to expand.
Well, thank you for those statistics. You know, I really means a lot that people can listen to us once a week and they can understand the authenticity of the people that I have on the air. Now, you know, I want to share this with you. You know, I appreciate you so much being a part of what the Sport Crime Museum is standing for, and you're writing and helping Professor Stoneman put together the House of Korea. Now, speaking of that, let me bring on my Tang-Soo-Go animal friend, A.J. Perry. How do you feel about martial arts being involved with the Olympics, A.J.?
Well, I think there's a place for it. Arlene, I'm sure she remembers Joe Kim, who was on the B team of the Olympics, and his brother-in-law was Juan Marino, his gold medalist. Well, Joe's stepfather was my original instructor, and we were Taekwondo Mudokwon, and which is Tang-Soo-Do. And I competed in full contact Taekwondo back in the early 80s. So I'm very well aware of how it operates, how political it was. I won the, you know, regionals down in Florida, qualified for nationals. I couldn't go because, you know, I couldn't afford it. I was in college. That all being said,
you need to get a job.
Well, I was teaching. Anyway, Taekwondo got very political. They had a lot of financial problems. Back in the day when it first started out, there were some great competitors. You know, when Arlene was competing, there's some just phenomenal competitors. But it's changed a lot. It's really turned into a cluster full of bad grapes. And
yeah,
it's, if you look at Taekwondo now, how they compete, they even do this Taekwondo dancing now, which is really, you know, I think, you know, a disservice to martial art. All that being said, in my opinion, if they want sparring with martial arts, this is my opinion, in the Olympics, and I'm not saying Kyokushinkai-kan, that's the martial art, but it should be that style, because that can cover all martial art. And that'll cover sweeps, throws, punching, kicking. Taekwondo's limited. When they spar, they just spar with their hands down, and all they do is kick. And it's very limited. It doesn't show the full potential of martial art. Where Kyokushinkai style sparring shows the full potential. They do sweeps, throws, punching, kicking. And as far as the forms aspect of martial art, yes, you know, you can do the Japanese style. They don't do the forms in Taekwondo, but they should, to show the full potential. But it needs to be non-political. And what happens was when you get Okinawans, Koreans, and Japanese together, it's all too political, because in my experience in martial art, they're very racist against each other. And it shouldn't
right.
be that way. The Olympics is
right.
supposed to bring people together.
Right. You're exactly right. So appreciate that, AJ. Now, I want to throw in Dean's opinion. Dean, you there?
Yes, I'm right here, but I do want to say right off of the bat that, you know, I do feel, take it personally, that AJ hit on karate dancing, because Andy Watford, I've beat him several times, and he is a kung fu dancer if there's ever been one. So, you know, I feel bad because, yeah, I'm just, you know. But yeah, AJ's right. That, you know, dancing in Taekwondo, that's goofy. You know, but actually, if you're going to do karate in the Olympics, you know, that's good. But it should be, if you want to really make it exciting, it needs to be like Olympic, like sport karate. So you have everything. Now, anybody can say what they want to. These kids that do these bow katas and some of the weapon katas, even some of the creative katas, their athleticism is off the chart at what they can do. Their hand-eye coordination to be able to keep up with the weapons as fast as they move it. I know a lot of times you say, well, you don't like the light weapons, but think about how fast that person's hand-eye coordination has to be to move that weapon that fast, tumble, spin, do spin kick, different things. You know, that will get people really watching. Most people that watch martial arts, they really don't know about the etiquette and the stuff behind it. And, you know, Olympic-style Taekwondo and Taekwondo being in the Olympics, it's hurt Taekwondo to some point because nobody takes it as a legitimate fighting style. And they go, well, you know, they don't block the face, they don't do this, they don't do that. But, you know, there's several kwans in Taekwondo. You know, the Marine Corps uses Chun De Kwan, and there's different levels. So some of those levels, yeah, they do mainly Olympic style. They don't use their hands. But a lot of Taekwondo systems like Chun De Kwan Taekwondo uses elbows. So, you know,
Dean, listen to me, buddy. You know, you mentioned the military. Do you remember the Rock Army of Korea?
Yes, the Rock Army. One of my instructors was from the Rock Army.
They were bad.
Yeah, those got Rock Marines. What they are, they're Rock Marines, Korean Rock Marines.
There was a man in Houston, a young Bo, and he was from the Rock Army, and he was bad. He did a school called Young Brothers. Bo Kong, that was his name. Bo Kong.
And Young Yu,
Well, Bo Yu was from California. I don't know if he was with the Rock Army or not, but Bo Kong.
I was talking about the guy you're talking about,
Yeah. But anyway, thank you, Dean. Now, don't go anywhere because the Wolverine will be here in a minute. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we bounced around from North Carolina to Ohio to Florida to Oregon to Las Vegas, and it's so cool to have the 4+1 and the 5 and our special guests like Jesse Bowen and, you know, and it's just so cool to be able to share sport karate and the authenticity of the people that we have on the air to share with you the history. Now, one of the things I've done for the past year, I've introduced virtual reality to everybody through a program called SetVR.app. Now, you go to Google, and you can see the demo by typing SetVR.app. Now, I've had for a year the co-inventor of SetVR.app on the air with me. And tonight, our first show of the year, our very special show, I have him on the air. His name is Dr. Reginald Lee. Reggie, are you there?
Good evening, sir. How you doing? Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year, and welcome to the first show of the year. So let's tell our listeners who are tuning in and maybe never listened to before, what exactly is SetVR.app?
As a martial artist and a clinician, I viewed martial arts and self-defense to be interrelated with not only learning respect, learning katas and forms, and understanding the application through interaction, but most importantly, to develop a reflex response against sudden and unpredictable attack to neutralize without hesitation and or thinking. My sensei, Richard Wigginton, my instructor, would always say to us, when the balloon goes up, you don't have time what technique to use. During an adrenaline surge, during a sudden and random attack, or, for example, being startled during a random attack, you will lose approximately, in general, 50 to 60% of what you've been taught. You'll be pushed to defend yourself by using your reflexes. SetVR will help you to train you to develop that reflex response against a random and sudden attack. We at SetVR continue to be super excited about SetVR self-defense enhancement training and virtual reality as a platform where you can practice your skills in self-defense anytime, anywhere, when you want. The program is portable and compact, and you can take it anywhere you travel, and even during a pandemic, to continue to practice your skills in self-defense while practicing social distancing. If you have to describe SetVR, I would describe it as a simulation program. You'll be actually immersed into the program. You'll not be sitting on a couch playing a video game. You'll be actually immersed into the program. With the Oculus Rift or Oculus Quest headset, you'll be transported to a virtual reality platform whereby a hologram will confront and attack you when you least expect it with random attacks. The goal of SetVR is to be able to neutralize an attack or a threat that is summoned, unpredictable, and random to improve your skills in evasion through angular, linear, or circular movements and to place you in an opportunistic position of an advantage to neutralize an attack to improve your skills in timing, speed, and accuracy, develop muscle memory, and develop that reflex response to a threat or stimulus to neutralize without hesitation. As I mentioned before, with metaphors, just like tapping your knee, you develop a reflex response, or you place your hand on a hot stove, or even if someone attacks you in your eyes, you blink. That is a reflex. This is a platform whereby you can practice to utilize what you've been taught in your schools and dojos and katas and forums or an application against a random attack to practice anytime, anywhere, when you want. We've implemented a program of mindfulness, of stretching, meditation, exercise, and we also present you with your own personal yoga instructor. We will continue to update SetVR in the future to help you to practice to maximize the application of self-defense when you want and where you want. We're planning to bring out multiplayer very soon, and you'll be amazed in regards to what multiplayer can do. For example, Professor Garley, he can practice against his own colleague on different parts of the world, different parts of the country. We will continue to introduce and endorse Professor Garley in the Sports Karate Museum to be the future platform of his vision of the history portal in SetVR. But before meeting Professor Garley, you would have be introduced to Professor Garley as the Wisdom Warrior, and you would have to neutralize the hologram attacker at the gate of the history portal. With that being said, Professor Garley, if you could mention some few words about your vision of your history museum in the SetVR and virtual reality.
Well, my vision is real simple. I want to educate. So once you get beat up or you beat up the hologram, you get to open the gate, and the gate will be the History General portals. That'll be the profiles of all the people that have supported the Sport Karate Museum. Now, we have a core group. We're going to have Mr. George Minshew, the first person to give away a gold ring in open competition. Chris Minshew, an NBL point world champion. Mr. Roy Kerman, Judge Roy Kerman, who introduced the two-point kick to America. And then Mr. Mike Dillard, the owner of Black Belt Magazine and Century Martial Arts. And then every month, we're going to add a new history general. All the people that you've been listening to tonight will be there, plus a dozen others. So it's going to be so cool. And I want to thank you, Reggie, for being on the air and teaching people what virtual reality is. And we wish you a happy new year.
Thank you, sir. Amazing show you have.
Now,
thank you.
Now, the last segment I love to do on this show is a show where is a man we call the Wolverine. His real name is Dean Piles. I met him earlier. But he means what he says. He says what he means, and he can back it up. Now, we featured him on this show for him to kind of speak out and be what he is. So I want to bring him on right now. Wolverine?
Yes, here.
Okay, here's the question, buddy. How has the Wolverine changed as he has matured through the decades of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s?
Man, I'm not sure I like how you use the word decades. But you know what? Wolverine is timeless, so I guess it's been a while. You know, I'll say that, you know, it has been a journey. That's a good question, because when I was younger, you know, I seen martial arts. actually, like a lot of people, I seen the Billy Jack movie for the first time. Now, obviously, you know, it was out before. But, you know, I'd seen it on TV. And, you know, my uncle bought me the Billy Jack hat. And I really, really loved the kick, you know, that Marcel Hall was doing in that, you know, that Billy Jack that you see in the movie doing. But, you know, so I was really interested in that. I was really interested in self-defense. So, believe it or not, as I was growing up, I was smaller, so I was bullied. But I, you know, fighting was something that was just in me. So, I just really wanted to learn those techniques, technically, because I wanted to be able to defend myself and be able to fight good, and I wanted to be able to kick good because, like I say, I like those kicks. But as I was younger, my parents got divorced, so you know, I had a temper, so I was very quick to, you know, go to my martial arts skills or to lash out if I felt threatened or somebody was bullying me, you know. But over the years, cultivating, going to competition, you know, you start to learn to use that same fire that you may have had in the beginning, but learn how to put it on a controlled burn to where you're more methodical and more thinking with the way that you fight or you attack or that you use your martial arts skills. And, you know, I don't just use my martial arts skills nowadays just for fighting, you know, or competition, but the health benefits with the Qigong and different things like that. Even doing the katas just helps lower the blood sugar because you can put a lot of energy and power into it, and that helps lower your blood sugars and stuff and helps bring that down. So, you know, just the health benefit. So it's come full circle from, you know, just being fist and fury to, you know, the cultivation and the execution of technique and the meaning of the technique. A lot of people don't know that some of the techniques have meaning, but just the science that Joe Lewis used to preach to us all the time behind the technique, you know. And, you know, just like Joe, you know, I like to tell things like it is because there's no sense in tap dancing around stuff and you know, not just, you know, telling it. So that's kind of where it came for me, is making that circle to being able to utilize my martial arts skills, not just to benefit myself and be able to protect myself or compete at a high level, but to be able to train the military to defend our country. Not just that, but to be able to use it to help people that have problems. Just like tonight, we had a lady come in. I started working with her on katas because she saw me working some kata, and she was like, she needed to do that. She had bad back, had all kinds of surgeries, knees, all kinds of health problems. But she's starting to do martial arts because she sees the kata. She first got into it for self-defense. But now that she's seen the katas, she's found something that I believe really going to help her as far as her health issues. And it's just awesome that martial arts can do so much, because most people don't look at it at what it is, and not just the respect and the honor and all that, but the strength, the flexibility, not just that, not just the fighting skills, but the health benefit and all that you get with it as well.
Well,
and I mean, then also, just on a Wolverine rant, then you do have to put up a lot of people's egos too. So you just have to do that also. But that, you know,
we appreciate your maturity.
That's another topic.
We appreciate your maturity, what you've become, and we thank you for being on this show, Wolverine, and thank you for another great year. And looking forward to this year, and looking forward to you bringing in the cameras and stuff for the production of the movie and what you're doing with that. And so God bless you, and I'll talk to you real soon, okay?
Hello, Shrinky.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring back our special guest, Arlene Lemus. Arlene?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm going to hit you with a name, and we're going to close the show out with that. The first name I'll hit you with is Toki Hill. You got 1 minute.
Toki Hill, I used to go compete at his instructor Don Madden's school, that big tournament in Chillicothe, Ohio. incredible athlete, first U.S. world champion in traditional karate, just a fantastic leader and instrumental in karate being accepted into the last Olympics.
Yes. How about her Perez?
Love it.
Her Perez. Good guy, you know. Little more braggadocious than I like my circle to be, but you know, did his thing in 92 and been on national team with him several times.
Yeah, how about Judge Roy Kerman? The
Emanuel
this year.
Yeah, I mean I can't say enough about you know Grandmaster Kerman, just fantastic. Man has done so much for martial arts, has been such an inspiration to me and mentor for me. So very appreciative of him as a martial artist and as a
how
person.
How about one of my best friends who brought you in this year, Jennifer Branch.
Jennifer Branch, I mean, I've known her since we were teenagers. We both did a lot of training with Grandmaster Steve Fisher. He was one of our mentors, just a really cool person, good friend of mine, and excited for her and her promotion this last year. So, yeah, just cool person all around.
Just a great lady. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight, and I apologize for the person who's playing the background noise, but listen, Arlene, you're a special person. And I want to invite you also to October to the movie we're doing and also the event we're doing for the ladies. But thank you for being on the show tonight and being a special guest. I wish you all the best.
Thank you, sir.
And Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, sir.
You bet. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we talked to a great lady tonight with Arlene Lemus and a slew of people, and we want to thank everybody for being on the show tonight, and thank you for that person who uses the background noise. If you're not talking, please mute your phone. I guess not listening to me. But
sometimes I don't even think they're listening to the show. They're just talking and don't even realize that we can hear them. They're not listening.
But thank you for another year, and we're going to make it strong this year with some great interviews on Parts Unknown. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, thank you, thank you. And we meet it every week, and we meet it from the heart. Mahalo and aloha. Good night, everybody.
Mahalo. Good night. Happy New Year.